With our good friend Bruce Jenkins on this Sunday morning. He's from The Chronicle, brought to you by Marvin Windows and Doors and Trude & White, the professional builder's choice, new showroom in Monterey. Probably not new anymore. It's been there a few months. Bruce, good morning on a Sunday.
Hey, Marty. How are you, man?
I'm doing well. Did you get up early to watch the British Open?
I got up early to do this, actually.
I'm proud of you.
I've got the British Open on tape, so
we'll be
queuing that up here pretty soon.
I'm not saying anything. I have no idea, because I don't know why I just said that to you, but I thought, thank you for getting up. Well, you wrote a great column today, and it touched on three really good subjects. One is Cespedes, and the A's should sign him as opposed to letting it run out and trading him somewhere. The other, of course, is on Pete Rose in the Hall of Fame, and the third one is on the All-Star Game, so maybe you could touch on that for us on this Sunday morning.
Well, as far as Cespedes goes, I mean, you know, the way Billy Beane operates, you almost expect them to, you know, say, well, we've gotten an awful lot out of this guy, and now it's time to, you know, get some prospects for him, and I think that would be a shame. I think there's something very special about him. You know, you look at the numbers, especially this year, they certainly don't blow you away, but you know, you've seen the throwing arm. You know how he steps up in the home run contest. He loves the spotlight. The guys on the team are starting to realize how much he really does enjoy the big moments, and his postseason performances have been great. I would just like to see them break the mold a little bit and re-sign him, because I really think that as good as they are, once you get into the postseason and some great pitching staffs and just, you know, the really big moments, I think he'd be an invaluable guy. As far as Pete Rose, I was watching a All-Star retrospective the other night. It was about Rose and Ray Fosse, but they were showing some clips of Rose, and just watching him just single to center, round first, a little twitchy, almost was going to take second, then he comes back. It's exciting. I mean, it's nothing, but the guy played the game with such a passion and energy and smarts that I was just riveted to the spectacle of that guy his entire career. And once you get inside the game and you're covering it, you realize this is not the greatest guy in the world. He's an other side of the tracks guy, and you can go into that forever. But I just think it's time for Bud Selig to release the death grip on this guy and put him back on the Hall of Fame ballot, or the person who succeeds Bud Selig.
I'm with you on that one. 4,256 hits. You know, I watched Pence yesterday, the way he plays, and it's Pete Rose, maybe a little bit less than that, if you can believe that. But you know, he went and made that catch Friday night against the wall, and last night he and Panic were going after a ball, and you know, he dove for it in foul territory. Everything he does is full speed, and Pete Rose was like that. And look, I practiced criminal law for a long time, and you know, people do get punished, and they do eventually come out of jail.
Yeah, exactly.
He's
in San Quentin, basically. I mean, for something that didn't happen during his playing career, which is what the Hall of Fame for Players is all about. But Pence, I mean, this is a guy who I just hope the Giants fans really appreciate him, and I'm sure the front office does. I'd hate to see him go anywhere else ever. But this is a guy who'll hit a comebacker, you know, right back to the pitcher and just bust his butt down to first. Who knows? The guy might throw it away. I mean, the way that he runs out grounders is very special to watch, very instructive for kids or anyone who appreciates the game. And, you know, he winds up beating out a lot of hits, and there goes the batting average up a little bit.
Well, he does. Tied for second in the league in hits right now, and he swings so hard that he gets on top of the ball.
Yeah.
And he'll hit these little toppers, as I call them, down the third or short. And you can't throw him out because he hustles so much, you can't get him.
Yeah, he's a real treasure.
All right, third one was the All-Star Game. And we touched on this yesterday for just home field advantage. But you brought up another point, and that is allowing the top stars to play most of the game, if not all of the game. And why can't that happen now? And it would take a lot to make it happen. Is it because they market everybody now and they want to market 70 players as opposed to a dozen players? Because really, in those things you pointed out, I mean, Mays would play the whole game, Aaron or Clemente. But today, they're so crazy about marketing, I don't think they'd ever let it happen again.
No, I don't. The owners always sway these decisions, and you know, every owner wants to be able to market his guy in the All-Star game. Every team has to have one guy. Well, that's a death blow right there. Now you've loaded up the roster. You've overloaded it to a horrible degree. And now once you've got a big roster and you're managing the team and you're looking at these guys in the dugout, they've got all anxious looks on their faces. They want to get in the game. And, again, of course, you want to get them in. But it's as we said yesterday, in prior decades, the rosters were smaller. The game didn't mean anything, but they played it like it did. I mean, there was a huge amount of league pride, some of which the interleague play has destroyed.
Right.
You don't see that. Now the game is supposed to mean something, and it's treated like an exhibition. So, I mean, it's just crazy. It's a shame we can't get back to the way it was. But, I mean, I was at the 1967 All-Star game in Anaheim, and it was a twilight game, and it went 15 innings. And not much scoring, but I was looking at the box score, and there's like nine guys, all of them huge names, as I put in the paper from Yaz, and the catcher Bill Freehan played the whole game.
it's something else to see that happen. One thing I'd like to see happen, and that is the starting pitcher pitch three innings. Now, this is not so radical. I mean, it's generally someone who is coming off decent rest. He gets to start the game.
Mm-hmm.
But it's such an honor to start the game. And in other words, you just don't go out and get three outs and we'll never see you again. I mean, you're anointed as the best pitcher in the league. You get this tremendous honor. Why not let that guy go three innings and then sort of piece it from there?
Yeah, and it was all about starters back then. You know, you might sneak in a Hoyt Wilhelm or a Ron Piranowski, but basically, you know, it was about Spahn, Marischal, Koufax, Gibson, Seaver, Carlton, whatever. The guys routinely went three innings. There were games, a lot of games, where the manager would just use three guys. Going back to that's one game was Bob Feller, Tommy Bridges, and Red Ruffing. You know, that's Hall of Fame stuff. The American League went like 5 years without using any more than three guys.
Yeah,
and you get a little. It feels like a ball game now. You know, when a pitcher can get through the order 1.5 times or whatever it takes. Maybe gets knocked out, but whatever. It's starting to feel like a little. Those games felt like real ball games because the stars stayed in the game and the pitchers went a little bit.
Yeah. The other thing on this Sunday morning with Bruce Jenkins that you hit on, and it's interleague. There's so much interleague that you lose that excitement of Willie Mays going against Whitey Ford because you've seen it somewhere down the road. You know, in interleague. The league presidents, I mean, there were separate leagues. Warren Giles was there. Harridge was there, way back when. Bobby Brown and Bill White, people like that. They would actually go in and really, I'm trying to make a speech. This was not like, well, let's go out there and have a good game, guys. I mean, this was like, Newt Rockne coming in.
Yeah, fire and brimstone. Willie Mays talks about that. There's a real passion for it. And now you go... Maybe Tulowitzki steps up against Scherzer. It's like, who could forget last week when these guys faced off against each other? You know.
All right. Well, enough of that. I think we're whistling in the dark here about this one because
we need Al Dark. Right. Get him in there.
He's still around. But it's just the marketing. It's the marketing and Fox and the money, and they want to make a big spectacle. And it's if they didn't say the game meant something, it would be just. Just a big exhibition game, and Fox probably would get excited, and they wouldn't be able to market it enough. So I think it's past us at this point. I think it's in the hands of the money. Hey, a good story in the Chronicle this morning about the third base coaches in the Bay Area. I don't know if you saw it this morning, but Tim
Flannery. Haven't quite gotten around to
it. Yeah, it's really good. Ron Krawczyk did it, and Tim Flannery and Mike Gallego.
Oh, yeah.
And two great guys, two real mm-hmm. baseball guys. It's a wonderful story. And I was over at the Coliseum, no, not the Coliseum, when the A's came into San Francisco. I went in the coach's room to say hello to Gallego, and boy, he was all over me. He was just all over me, and I can't tell you how much because I mentioned the other about a few months ago. Boy, these third base coaches in baseball, Tim Flannery and Mike Quatty. And I forgot, and I just didn't, he's so short, I forgot about him. I hope he's listening to this on the way to the Coliseum.
But he literally slid under the radar.
He did. He slid, and I felt terrible because he really is an outstanding third base coach. He's a former Yankee. We've got a great interview with him. We'll probably play tonight about something that came up with Mike and George Steinbrenner. But we're blessed, really, with the third base coaches, I think, Bruce. And, it's not that they're under the radar. I mean, they make an impact on the game, and they generally don't make wrong decisions.
Ah, it's uncanny, both of those guys. You know, Flannery, you know, he's a pretty flamboyant character over there. And if you're going to be that way, it's not like he's showing anybody up, but he's so into it. He's running almost to the plate, you know, when he's got a guy coming in. And, you know, you want to be right. You don't want to be a clown out there. He's right so often, and usually the gambles that he takes that backfires are worth taking because of the situation in the game. But what I love about those guys, they're really good ones. They do an intense amount of scouting on arms, yeah. not just reputation, but, like, how were they in the last series? Is somebody throwing like he's got a sore arm, or, geez, this guy's throwing better than he has in years? And it all goes through a guy's head in a matter of seconds, trying to decide whether to send a guy home. And that part of the game is fascinating to me. And Flannery invariably has a perfect read on all three of the outfielders, or maybe a second baseman making a deep cutoff throw. He knows what they tend to do and what they've done just lately. So that's a great aspect of the game.
Yeah, they're two grinders too. See, as ball players, Flannery and Gago were grinders. I mean, you know, they never made, you know, they had to fight for their positions all the time. They could bunt, they could do it all, and I think they bring that to the third base coaching part where they really understand the game. And just what you just described, they had to know that as a player. You know, Gallego's claim to fame is he was playing short for the Yankees early in the 1990s, 1994, 95. And he was taking ground balls, and some kid came up to shortstop, and Gallego said, "Yeah, go ahead. Why don't you take a few?" And you know who that turned out to be? You know, Derek Jeter. So he tells that story a lot, that he yielded shortstop to Derek Jeter.
Exactly. Yeah, if Mike's listening, we'll give him a little prop here. I swear, when it comes to the act of picking up a ground ball that's more or less right at you, nobody ever was better than this guy. Nobody was
really
more reliable. Obviously, guys with better range, maybe better arms, but the act of picking up a ground ball, which is so essential to the game, Mike Gallego stands with anybody.
All right, I hope he's listening because now we're even. I don't want to hear a word about him again.
He will never be mentioned again.
Right. I'm even, Gallego. I got your publicity that you very well deserve. Hey, it's Lincecum Day today. Is it Lincecum, the new Lincecum, 30 innings, a run given up? He goes into the heat of Miami. I thought they were going to turn the air conditioning up a little bit for him. But this is like the old days. It's Lincecum Day today.
Yeah, it's a big one. It really is. I mean, the team's on a roll. People are starting to forget how poorly they played in June. Lincecum's got a four-game winning streak. The Marlins are down. The Giants are up. You'd think there's no reason why they can't put up another win today. They'd love to see them go at least six strong. And if that happens and they win, you know, they go into Philly with a huge head of steam and really looking good on a lot of fronts. You know, if it gets lit up, it's not the end of the world. I mean, the Giants have rolled with a lot of punches this year. But I think it's a very big game for him, especially because it's on the road in the heat and you know, the whole reputation he's got there. He can just do a lot to ease people's minds today.
Yeah, you want to see him do it again. I mean, there's still that little doubt in there. And, you know, he's got that today. Kershaw has got the Cardinals and Martinez today. And Kershaw blew up in the playoffs last year in St. Louis in Game 6. And he hasn't won a game in St. Louis. He's 0-5 in his last five decisions in St. Louis, apparently. So he got that. And what a week of baseball this is going to be, Bruce, because I think it's a very telling week. You get Cliff Lee and Burnett and the old Fausto Carmona and Cole Hamels. And you come home with Greinke and Kershaw and Ryu. I think this is a very telling week, and I can see why Brian Sabian is sort of still a little hesitant on the ball club. This is one heck of a week of baseball coming up.
Yeah, things are getting a little more clear as to what they need. I think, you know, the outfield thing is really coming to the fore now. Just depending on how they look at Joe Panik, it's a big week for him. You know, I don't think he looks like a .213 hitter up there, whatever his average is, but that's what it is, and you really can't have that. So that's going to be interesting. But yeah, I mean, they've done an awful lot in a short time to make people forget, you know, how they lost that big lead. It seems like they're back, you know. So if they can get through this week, win the Philly series, win the Dodgers series, people are going to start looking at them differently.
Yeah, I think we'll update Belt a little bit later on the show, but Belt is not on the DL. It looked like Contos was coming up, and then they crossed that off the lineup card. So I assume they want Belt to play this week if he can. I would not be, unless his concussion symptoms are so positive, I think they're probably going to be very cautious with him and try to get him back in there this week. They need him this week, especially in Philly with a small ballpark, and they hit home runs.
Yeah, and by the way, did you see how close that Saltalamacchia throw came to his face?
Oh, you know, I said it last night on the postgame. I said, Bruce, I said 1 foot to the right, and that would have been the end of Belt.
Somebody froze, I don't know if they froze a video or if it was actually a photo, but the ball looked more like it was 6 inches from his face.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Imagine him getting beamed twice in one night. Yeah,
well, it wouldn't be his night, I would tell you that.
No, it wasn't already, but that having him in Philly would be big. And you know, they need to go in there and hit a few bombs.
Yeah.
You know, because that's becoming a little bit of their identity. They're starting to get back to it now, so that'll be interesting to watch.
Yeah, one last thing. It's Sunday morning. I love chatting with you on Sunday baseball. How about Stanton's home run? you know, Romo threw the ball, and it just it hung up there on the inside, but it was almost like, you know, it's crazy. It was like a reptile, you know, the way he jumped, jumped on that pitch. And
oh
it
God.
Was, I mean, it was, Bruce, the swing, as soon as it hit the ball, hit the bat.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Classic,
absolutely.
Wasn't it?
I hope I'm sure Dave Van Horn didn't, but I didn't want to hear an announcer go, oh, there's a ball hit to the left side. It's in the air, you know. But it was like it was choreographed. Romo goes, okay, here's where the pitch is going to be. And you can just go ahead and jump all over. So you're thinking, oh, my God, I thought maybe Romo was coming back a little bit, but now he's taking a few steps back. But,
yeah.
Oh, my God. Man, when Stanton gets it, it's one of the great sights in the game.
Well, when a power hit, you know, we've seen so much baseball on TV over the years, so much baseball, and you can just tell the swing and the way the ball leaves the bat.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't need to say back, and it's going.
No,
you know?
No, exactly.
Yeah, you know it.
And that's what's great about John Miller and Ken Kiper. You know, they're so good about reading the ball off the bat, and they get the drama into it just instantly.
Yeah.
You know, because they've seen it, they've seen it too many times. But and there aren't that many, you know, really electric power hitters in the game today. So when you get a guy like Stanton, I mean, you guys who really just blow your mind.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, he's something else. Hey, enjoy the Sunday, and I hope you're feeling better, and I hope you make it out to the Dodgers series next week, and hope we see you.
I definitely will. I will see you there, if not sooner.
All right, thanks, Bruce. Have a good day.
Okay, Marty.
All right, that is Bruce Jenkins, of course, of the Chronicle.